You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insights from around the racing world. It's Tuesday, September the 15th, and it is a glorious early autumn day here in southwest London. And if that puts you in a pretty good mood, that is in stark contrast to the prevailing mood of the nation, dare I say it, the world, with the R rate rising and news of doom and gloom as we head into the winter and the possibility of a second lockdown. And the sport itself is rather a microcosm of that, as it is in this very difficult position as to know what to do next as regards getting crowds back to racecourses, having meaningful paying spectators every day from now until the end of the year, as we talked about last week with some optimism. Now we retreat from that position, given the fact that there are more cases per 100,000 than there were 7 days ago. And that, of course, is brought into sharp focus by the fact there's another intended trial day, pilot day, at Warwick Racecourse on Monday, and then the 3 days of Newmarket's prestigious Cambridgeshire meeting at the back end of next week. Decisions as to the viability of allowing spectators into those events are taking place as we speak, and we may yet get announcements on that today. It seems like Groundhog Day, us discussing this on this programme. There are subtle shifts backwards and forwards, but fundamentally there are dilemmas faced by racecourse executives. I'm joined by David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror. Dave, what now are the dilemmas facing racecourse executives? And how do they go forward? How do they proceed? How should they proceed in light of the news of the last 7 days?
Yeah, it's essentially a pretty similar dilemma, though, Nick, isn't it? You say you use the phrase Groundhog Day, and I think what it's got to do and what it will do, pretty much the same things as it's done before. Look at the evidence before it, take a decision. That the government's thinking on COVID-19, I think, continues to be quite muddled. We had the Joy of Six come in limiting the number of people that could congregate together on Monday, but you can still have loads of groups of six sitting in a pub garden. I think that my stance would be, having looked at the evidence, if it's possible still to proceed with the idea of the pilots, I think I would go with that. In the case of Newmarket, we're 9 days away, so much can change for better or worse in that time. I would also be minded, of course, that in view of Cheltenham, which is, I think, universally perceived as something of an own goal for racing, PR-wise, that should anything go wrong, there will still be that stick which can be used to beat us. So I hate to sit on the fence, but I think I would proceed positively, but with caution. How woolly does that sound?
It sounds woolly, but I think I understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying is the sport says we are going ahead. If the rug gets pulled from under our feet, so be it. But it is our intention to go ahead. I think that's the position that you would take.
One thing I would say, Nick, is that rather than just making a decision unilaterally, I think racing would be well advised to look at the sports around it. It's very hard, even in the current circumstances in which we're all very concerned about what's going on. It's very hard to think that the cutthroats in, say, Premier League football, the hardheads there, will be thinking, right, let's pack up the tent and sit quiet for a while before we're told to do so. So whilst we have to take caution as our watchword, I'm sure that other sports would be wanting to proceed, and as I say, not pack up until they're actually told to do that by higher authority.
I think the point to note is that racecourses have to take a slightly different position from the Racecourse Association. The Racecourse Association today have made a strong and robust case for why the trials can go ahead at Warwick and Newmarket, which is a position that they're able to take as a trade body, if you like. I think the individual racecourses have to be much more engaged with the local issues of public health and have to be very much across the R rate and the cases per 100,000 in the area. And that can be incredibly variable, not just from day to day, but from micro region to micro region. And I would imagine that is playing heavily on the executive at Newmarket's mind at the moment. And I think, as we've discussed on this podcast before, Dave, the spectre of Cheltenham and the public relations issue there continues to play on their minds.
Yes, it will do. And you're right, the RCA has a broad brush policy to come up with, and that is split into, well, regional considerations, isn't it, when you get to racecourses. Of course, Warwick might be complicated by the fact that it's not very far from Birmingham, which, of course, has a high rate at the moment. As for Newmarket, the rate there, we were talking off air earlier, that's about 16 per 100,000 at the moment. Is that correct?
It is. Well, interestingly, it is where the Rowley Mile racecourse is. Ironically, the July racecourse, it's 1 per 100,000, and they are but 2.5 miles apart from one another.
Yeah.
So that shows you how nuanced this situation is. It shows you the dilemma these racecourse executives find themselves in. But how important do you think it is for them in terms of a community engagement perspective?
I think it's hugely important, not only from a community engagement perspective, and that community wants crowds back at the earliest possible opportunity, but I think there's also a wider aspect to it as well that goes beyond the community. I think we all want the same thing, and that is for the crowds to return as quickly as possible. Just to put that Newmarket, those Newmarket figures into context with what happened at Doncaster last week, the cases per 100,000 before the crowd pilot was canned, that was 10. So 16 is higher than that, but it's actually lower than the 20, which Dr. Rupert Suckling said in midsummer would be the figure that would start giving him cause for concern.
Just on a related point, I think it's worth touching on the situation that's developing in Ireland at the moment, where we now have three jockeys having tested positive for COVID-19. We have to imagine that a situation like this, with the winter approaching and with children going back to school and spread of virus is likely to increase, we have to imagine that that is going to be a potential threat that will undermine racing on a broader scale, both in Britain and in Ireland.
Yeah, very much. Everywhere. In fact, I'm quite surprised in a way, Nick, that this hasn't happened already, because, as you say, when it does, it is a huge cause for concern. Hopefully in Ireland, as you say, that the original case has now risen to three. Hopefully that's a situation that can be kept under control. But I think in time that may prove a very serious threat indeed, especially as the winter comes on over the next couple of months.
Well, you're listening to the Daily Podcast, Tuesday, September the 15th. David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror, still with me. Dave, we're going to look back at last weekend's action. And Rishi and I spoke about this yesterday. And his view on the weekend as a whole was that it rather reduced the arc to the match that it had been billed as between Love and Enable. Is that something that you would agree with?
Well, it took out Gaeaf, didn't it? I don't think Stradivarius is necessarily less likely to win the Arc as a result of what happened in France at the weekend, but I think that he's a pretty unlikely winner anyway. You do have stayers who win the Arc, we know that, but I would be surprised if he were able to cope with one or other or both of Love and Enable. He was beaten by Dick Van Dyke, who's a Derby winner of the past, and you know, didn't run, the form between them is probably similar, Paris-Longchamp, to how it was at Newmarket and the Coronation Cup back in the spring. So, it does look at the moment as though it's. I'm not sure I'd want to call it a match, but certainly they're the two most convincing candidates.
I must confess, I thought Stradivarius enhanced his claims for the Arc somewhat in a slowly run race that wouldn't have been to his liking. And the fact that he's been prepared for the race specifically for about 18 months gives me rather greater hope.
Well, that's a very good point. Obviously, you know, John Gosden will have, since the Goodwood Cup, they've had their plan, haven't they? At Goodwood, John Gosden said, we'll go to trials day, and then if everything goes okay, we'll go to Longchamp. And things did go okay, didn't they? You know, there was nothing there that would persuade you not to run. As I say, whether he's going to be quite fast enough for the horses ahead of him in the betting, I think is open to doubt. But I don't think he's less likely to win it as a result of that defeat on Sunday than he was before.
I want to pick up another point from the weekend, and that's the comment that I referred to yesterday from Dermot Weld, who struck at Group 1 level both in Ireland and in France, when he said that Ireland simply has the best trainers in the world. And on what we saw at the weekend, I know it was Irish Champions weekend, how inclined or disinclined are you to agree with that, Dave?
Well, they were pretty dominant, weren't they? Obviously, we had the O'Brien and Sons training Group 1 winners, Dermot Weld too. I'm not sure I'd want to row in with that stable 100%. I think there are some extremely able trainers, not only in this country, but beyond. So, yeah, I think, well, was that not a bit of tub thumping to maybe boost morale after a pretty dire few months for Irish racing, as we've experienced here? I think certainly the one thing I would say, and it was whilst it was very welcome to see Dermot Weld have a couple of Group 1s and that resurgence at the weekend, I think the domination within Irish racing of particularly of Ballydoyle does make it a less attractive sport to watch. And I don't say that with any ill feeling towards those at Ballydoyle. Aidan O'Brien's extremely helpful, but if you've got one concern that's dominating, then that's bad for a sport. And in that sense, of course, Dermot Weld and even Aidan's sons, Donica and Joseph, success for them has to be welcomed.
Well, when the temperature's set to rise to about 29 degrees, jump racing is quite a long way from your mind, but it won't be long until we're there. Chepstow, Cheltenham, October, and then away we go into the winter. Who knows how many people will be there, but we do know that'll be superb quality horses, many of whom will be trained by Paul Nicholls. So I thought I'd just check in this morning with Paul to see how things are going, really. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, and thankfully everybody in the team's good and been healthy all the way along, which is the main thing. So, yeah, we're all, you know, looking forward to the middle of October with great anticipation.
And, you know, obviously this has been a very challenging year for everybody, yeah. And you missed out on the very back end of the jump season. But if lockdown was going to come, I suppose it could have been worse for National Hunt trainers.
Yeah, it could have been a lot worse. You know, it was the back end of our season, just as we were starting to think about roughing horses off. So apart from missing that last 6 weeks of really good racing, we were able to sort of rough the horses, give them a good summer break, and then come back in as per normal and you know, gear up to be ready for the middle of October, plus have a few to run through the summer.
And has anything changed in the way that you've been preparing horses because of that? Have you got more horses ready to run earlier?
Well, I probably had a few more to run in the summer than I normally do. We, you know, normally have four or five winners. We've had 15 so far, and we're flying along well because those horses never run in the back end. But as other than that, really, we're just as normal. You know, we've done the normal things, thinned a few out, bought some new ones, all ready to go as normal from October.
So, what's exciting you most about the season ahead?
It's just, you know, October comes up, Chepstow that weekend is always the start of it. Yeah, a lot of exciting young horses. We got a lot in work. It's, you know, having everybody in the sport could do with looking forward to some good racing from October onwards. That's jump racing, obviously, and that'll be good.
Who are likely to be flying the flag mostly for Ditchett this year? Who are the stable stars we can all look forward to seeing again?
Obviously, I'm top of the game. Touching Woods coming back. There's still Clanders Abow, top of the game. We've got a lot of new horses. Jared Sullivan Bloodstock sent me most of his, which include horses like Lorena, Stormy Island, Real Steel, on and on. And a lot of the, you know, Johnny and Sam Delahaye got some lovely young horses, including Victoria's going to go novitiation. You could go on and on. You know, we've got a really lovely team.
And are we likely to see top of the game try and do, as you said, try and do a Denman by carrying a big weight in what used to be the Hennessy, now the Ladbrokes Trophy at Newbury?
Yeah, that's the sort of plan at the moment. Obviously, it's a long way to go with him, and you know, he's fragile. We've got to be careful. But I couldn't really see too much of a point in running him anywhere beforehand. and nothing really suitable. So, you know, we just a nice long slow prep, race course gallop at 2 and having really ready for his life that day, work with Denman, and hopefully, you know, we can get him there fit to run for his life on that day.
Are you going to run into Clan des Obos before a bid for a third King George?
He'll run somewhere. I'd say at the moment, I'm thinking Surname might go to Ireland for Down Royal, and I'll probably leave Clan des Obos to go for the Betfair Chase at Haydock, which is a track that does suit him. But just you know, it's just like last year, one prep run, King George is a main aim for him.
And you mentioned Surname. Have you got him back where you want him?
I'd say he looks at the moment the best he's ever looked. He's in good shape. He was actually all right again to run in the spring back end, but we couldn't. He's had a great summer, scored yesterday. We got to prove to ourselves that he gets 3 miles, and I thought Downwall was a great starting point for him, because if he does get 3 miles, then we got plenty of time to Kempton rather than run at Ascot, then like last year, it's too close to obviously between Ascot and Kempton. So Downwall suited well if we can. That all goes ahead and we can get there. And then we'll know whether we stay 3 miles or not.
Can't not mention Politolog, your 2 mile champion chase winner, Paul.
Yeah. He looks great. And he needs to be fresh these days when he runs a nice gap between runs. So first time will be the main time. I haven't really discussed it with John, but it's whether we give him running something like the Holden Gold Cup en route to the Tingle Creek. But I suspect our first run will be the Tingle Creek.
And you mentioned Pick Dory, he won the Betfair Hurdle last year. If he jumps fences well, he could be a real star.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, he's only 5, a big strong horse. He was born to go chasing. You know, if he jumps well and gets that thing right, then he could be a really exciting chaser, yeah.
And as far as jockeys are concerned for this year, it's pretty much the same team as last, Harry Cobden, Bryony Frost and co.
Yeah, well, obviously, Harry's number one. He's done very well. He's riding well this season. Brian, he's there. Sean Bowen and Harry Skelton ride out for us. And we've got two good claimers in Lorcan Williams and Brian Carver. So we've got a great team of jockeys.
Yeah, Harry Skelton won that Queen Mother Champion chase for you. Would you expect to use him again a bit more this year if you can?
Yeah. I mean, Harry's riding the top of his game. He's done very well. And, you know, obviously, Dan, he obviously rides all Dan's. But when he's available on days that we could use him, we will use him, yeah. You know, he comes down once a week, he's invaluable schooling, and yeah, we'll use him where we can.
And you're in good form, Paul?
Yeah, I am, yeah. Really looking forward to, you know, the new season. We've kept ticking over, but now that, like, the work's stepping up, they're all doing loads of work, and really looking forward to getting going. So, yeah, feeling good.
Thanks for chatting to me.
Okay, Nick, anytime.
Well, my thanks to Paul Nicholls. I guess it's just a sign of the time of the year, Dave. There's just something that itches away at you that you need to just tune in quietly to the jumping.
Absolutely. It's dark at 8 o'clock, 8:30, isn't it, at the moment? So whilst we've all had our flat heads on for the last few months, that will change. I'm interested to see, well, obviously, you know, Paul Nicholls will have a raft of interesting horses as he does every year, but Top of the Game is the one that I'm most looking forward to seeing. Obviously, he looked a really exciting novice before having last season off. That the Ladbrokes Trophy will give us a really good indication of whether he can be a player at the highest level in staying chases. I really hope he can. He looked very exciting, and he's the one that I'm really looking forward to seeing most of all.
So it's Tuesday. It's time for our weekly Bloodstock and Pedigree segment in partnership with Weatherby's and the Global Stallion app. And I'm delighted to be joined by leading Bloodstock agent Oliver St. Lawrence, who this autumn has signed for the top price yearling at the Arcana sale, €2.5 million. More of that in a few moments' time. But first of all, Oliver, how do you assess the mood out there at the moment in the Bloodstock world?
Well, it's been a strange start to the season, but I get the impression that there are people out there wanting to buy. They know that there are going to be opportunities to buy at a sensible price this year. And yes, it is tricky for vendors, but I think most people are getting horses sold if they're being sensible about reserves and things.
Let's talk about your most notable purchase this autumn, which is at the Arcana sale with the €2.5 million yearling. Just tell me a little bit about that and where the horse is headed and what that might tell us about where the cradle of Bloodstock power might start to lie.
Well, I was delighted to buy her. I wasn't really expecting to buy her. We knew she was going to be a big ticket item. I bought her with Fazi Nass, who trains in Bahrain and is helps a couple of owners, big owners out there in Bahrain. So we always had our eye on her, but we always thought she was going to make too much money. Luckily, that very afternoon that she came through the sales ring, Sheikh Nasser Al Khalifa, who we partly bought the filly for, had two winners in England, including the one of the Weatherby's Bank sales race up at Doncaster, worth a couple of hundred thousand. So the stars aligned, and when she came in the ring, everyone was in a good mood, and it was a very big ticket and a big call for her. But she's got a beautiful pedigree, she's a beautiful looker. And hopefully she's a sales topper that we will remember the name of when she gets to race.
So she was by Dubawi, and she's a half-sister to Sotsass and Sister Charlie. There aren't too many better pedigrees around. And what's going to happen to her now?
She's back in the UK, highly likely to go to a trainer here in Newmarket. That hasn't been confirmed as yet. But I'd say that is highly likely. And as you say, she's got this beautiful pedigree. If she never races, she has a very large residual value as a broodmare. And it's, you know, she has some backup to the big price we've paid for her.
And just in terms of the money that's being spent by Bahrain interests at the moment, is that a signal that this is an emerging force in international bloodstock, do you think?
I think a little. Over the last few years, they've been having a tremendous amount of success. We had De Gea last year that won at Royal Ascot and won the Group 2 Rockfell. This year, you've got Sheikh Sultan having Golden Horde. Sheikh Issa's got a good horse. They're all having this about five of them out there who are sort of big players, who are all having a lot of fun on British racecourses, and there's some friendly rivalry going on that's egging each other on, and they're enjoying themselves.
And Oliver, how well do you think that British interests are being represented abroad at the moment?
I think we're doing very well. I mean, I think we punch above our weight. British horses are very sought of after abroad, whether it's America or Hong Kong or the Middle East. Agents are getting out there and promoting them. Great British Racing International with Amanda Pryor and Minty Farquhar doing a great job promoting us abroad. I think we're punching above our weight. The overseas owners are wanting to come and buy British horses.
And just in terms of a market for horses in training, obviously, people will be looking to British horses in that sort of mid-range bracket, if you like, to go abroad, because they're seeing an opportunity at the moment with our prize money levels depressed. Do you think that's a concern for racing in Britain?
I think it's got to be a concern for racing in Britain. I mean, it's obviously the overseas benefit that they can come here and pillage our horses. We've always done sent a lot of horses overseas with a decent racing. But it is of concern that those levels of purchases might be increasing. It all comes back to prize money and that conundrum of how we sort out British prize money.
And that is, I think, probably a conversation for another day and many more days on this podcast in months to come. Just finally, Oliver, just looking ahead to the remainder of the yearling sales, we've obviously got four books at Tattersall's and lots more to enjoy or endure, depending on which side of it you're on for the mm-hmm. next few weeks. Do you sense that what's happened at Arcana and Doncaster has given people confidence or has instilled trepidation?
Probably both in equal measure. I mean, I thought the Doncaster sale was very solid trade. I was surprised how deep the buying bench was there, especially without Sheikh Hamdam and those teams coming into action. Arcana was probably a little bit more patchy with the buyback rate quite high, but they've got good prize money to race for there. I think there's lots to be positive about the sales. I think, you know, there's some great stock I know coming up, and, you know, be patient if you're a buyer, because there will be a horse there for you at the price you want. And if you're a vendor, as long as you set your reserve sensibly, you can keep the wheels turning, and there'll be more years to come.
So David Yates still with me. Dave, just a tip for today.
Right. Well, I'm going to go with 20 shares of Grey, Nick, in the 505 at Kempton Park today. We were working at the Sunbury track when this horse finished second to Publicist, beaten half a length. Didn't get the breaks that day, and despite a nudge up the weights, I think that she can go one better. I don't think that the step up from 7 to a mile would be a problem. So 20 shares of Grey in the 505 at Kempton Park.
Okay, that's all from us today. My thanks to Dave, my thanks to you for listening as well. If you do enjoy this podcast, please do tell your friends and anyone else you know. And don't forget to ask them to rate, review and subscribe. And you can subscribe on Spotify, on SoundCloud, on iTunes and on Google. And if you do that, it'll just pop up for you automatically every day. We will be back to do it all again tomorrow. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.